if you're here because the abstract was rather provocative, I'm going to damper your hopes for attempts to solve anything this morning. But really, this talk, Technology, Dispositional Values, and Virtues, Proposals for Addressing Emerging Technologies in Bioethics, is part of my longer project of work that I'm doing at the Center for Bioethics and Human Dignity. My background is primarily theology and philosophy. I teach computer ethics in the college. And so as a bioethicist, whatever that means, my primary area of applied ethics is actually technology. And so I'm rather distinct in that because most people come from medical backgrounds or the sciences in general. Okay. Of course, to speak of emerging technologies as if it is a monolithic entity of developments in technology, science, and medicine is already to misunderstand the landscape of our contemporary situation. By invoking this concept, I do not mean to imply that the technologies that would fall under this umbrella exhibit any sort of familial resemblance, either in application or in research. Rather, by the concept emerging technologies in bioethics, I'm pointing to a varied array of scientific developments and technological innovations which now find themselves at home in the ethical discourse of bioethics, but have neither a significant history nor an origin within the realm of medicine. Thus, we see a shift in the scope of bioethical inquiry and a subsequent demand for those involved to transcend the medical ethics origins of the field and to reflect upon a host of issues with which its traditional heuristics of ethical analysis are ill-equipped. We see this in the standard accounts of what passes for bioethical reflection on these emerging technologies as primarily, and in some cases solely, risk assessment. While the questions of safety of life and limb are paramount, the broader questions of social disposition, of impact, of human futures, and human flourishing are often overlooked by a form of principled casuistry that strongly emphasizes autonomy with only occasional reference to beneficence, non-maleficence, and some vague notion of justice. That a shift in bioethics has occurred is not a novelty. Nigel Cameron, a theologian and founding figure of the center that I work for, among a number of others, has noted at least three distinct stages in the development of bioethics as a whole. He terms these taking, making, and faking. While many of the ethical questions of the late 20th century dealt with bioethical concerns over the beginning and end of life, the making and taking of human life, or in other words, the boundaries of human life questions, what we at CBHD have begun calling bioethics one, the questions raised by these emerging technologies threaten to change the nature of the human species and the very essence of what it means to be human. We're on the cusp of entering a new phase in ethical issues, what we've been referring to as bioethics 2.0. In effect, that these emerging technologies are shifting the bioethical questions away from the boundaries of human life to the possibility of remaking humanity and the human being as such. What might this shift portend for the nature of bioethical reflection? More pointedly, what resources, tools, heuristics, and so forth should be brought to bear in our ethical toolkit for reflection on these emerging technologies? So three proposals this morning, none of which there is sufficient time to unpack here, but I at least wanted to introduce as a potentially constructive way forward, even if in a preliminary fashion. I'm just going to quickly sketch these in the high likelihood that I don't get through all of the material this morning. The first of these proposals accesses resources within a philosophy of technology, in particular, the postulate of technology as value-laden. The proposal is that the value-ladenness of technology may offer a means to access a thicker interpretation for the ethics of technology beyond simplistic formulations of technology as merely good or evil. This proposal, certainly not original from me, demands that common responses to and engagement with technology must become more nuanced. Secondly, if value-ladenness is an ontological aspect of technology, or in other words, that the nature of technologies themselves embody certain values, then the ethical discussion of technology should reflect upon the nature of such values and how they impact, or better, impress upon us as users, both individually and societally. Here is where I propose the idea of dispositional value, to suggest that technologies push, or in some cases maybe pull us, in certain directions through the values they embody, sometimes weakly, sometimes strongly. This second proposal is an explicit attempt to understand the forcefulness of technologies by acknowledging that while humans craft tools and technologies, these artifacts in turn force us to conform to them in their use. Not simply mere extensions of us as users or our morality, these technologies contribute as influential forces of value, or what I am referring to as dispositional value, complicating the issue of moral agency. Furthermore, dispositional value is my attempt to open room for the responsibilist rejection of technological determinism, which in general overrides the autonomy of the moral agent. Traditional interpretations of technological value have often fallen either to the realm of determinism, whether inherently good or bad, and thus oversimplifying the technological ontology, or to the realm of solely autonomous user, with its implicit assumption that technology is value neutral. Here I must apologize in advance for rather oversimplification of these perspectives, but I'm classifying them in this way merely for descriptive purposes. The third and final proposal comes from my long-standing personal interest in virtue theory as a possible means to overcome the current collapse of our contemporary digitized reality in some rendering of Jacques Ellul's technological society. By rescuing the concept of techne, that is, the technical craft, from its current position as an all-encompassing paradigm and placing it within the context of a more robust notion of one among the intellectual virtues, it is my wager that we may be better able to situate the pursuit of knowledge and the advancement of the technological enterprise in ways fitting to human flourishing. So enough on the introductions and on to the content. First, a reflection on technology as value-laden offers a thicker description for the ethics of technology beyond simplistic formulations of technology as merely good or evil. Despite a general ignorance or outright dismissal of the notion within the general population, the concept of value-ladenness in technology, and by technology here I mean sufficiently complex technologies which may or may not exclude simple tools. Okay, that's a conversation for another time. The concept of value-ladenness has gained a level of general acceptance within the philosophy of technology discourse and in many quarters of engineering ethics, particularly those pertaining to the realms of information and communication technology. That there are a variety of values and what these might be has been less rigorously worked through. To say that we live in a scientifically and technologically sophisticated age seems at most a platitude. Machines, gadgets, products of engineering and science are everywhere, clearly. They are ubiquitous realities of our everyday experience, not least of which are their growing presence in the biomedical sector. Technology from all quarters of consumer electronics to medical technologies, advanced robotics, and information and communication technology infrastructures promise to improve efficiency and ease of our everyday lives. As I've heard theologian Brent Waters from up at Garrett Theological Seminary up the road in Evanston say on more than one occasion, technology is the way we live and move and have our being in today's age. We create previously non-existent product markets of need right alongside the signs and wonders of truly miraculous human ingenuity. From synthetic cells and bionic eyes to 4G iPhones and refrigerators with built-in computers to help us order our everyday lives. It is no wonder that according to a recently published Pew Foundation study, many Americans are optimistic about the future of science and technology. Through our regular pilgrimage to the local electronics big box, we pay homage to the consumer doctrine of planned obsolescence. That is, the reality that every technological product of our age has a half-life of sorts in its intended product cycle. Yesterday's innovation is merely today's latest gadget, which tomorrow will be discarded as a forgotten relic and crushed under the supposed march of technological progress. So where has Christianity been in this emergence of technoculture? Christianity has had a long and varied relationship with science, something I clearly don't need to rehash in this context, and as might be expected, the technological revolution is no exception. Responses to technology, internal and external to Christianity, have ranged from total rejectionism, often referred to as the technological Luddites or their close cousins, the technological sentimentalists, to an occasional critical or more often uncritical adoptionism, what I have begun to refer to as technological pragmatists. and onto those who worship at the altar of technological messianism, often referred to as technicists or techno-utopians. For the most part, individuals on the fringes of this continuum are few and far between, although there has been a marked growth in the sentiments of technicism within the culture as a whole. The vast majority of the general American population, whether Christian or otherwise, defaults somewhere toward the middle category, with a strong tendency toward uncritical, or perhaps better, naive consumerism. Planned obsolescence and abbreviated product life cycles tempt us into the latest and greatest. We want what we want when we want it. And while not worshiping at an altar of technological redemption, many of us find ourselves captive to the lust for greater efficiency and unrestrained technological capacity. In an age when Homo Faber, that is man the maker, is no longer ontologically different than its creations, that is its tools and its technologies, and cautions to pause for ethical reflection are crushed under the march of supposed progress, how do we understand terms like human flourishing and human futures in the context of the biotechnological century and the technological society? In an age of naive technological pragmatism, imperfection and brokenness have no currency, no value. They are merely technical hurdles to be overcome, problems that technology needs to solve. These marvels of technological innovation move at breakneck speeds, from speculative science fiction to consumer product reality, often catching the average consumer completely by surprise. The difficulty with which we have to resist these currents suggests that maybe, or that in many ways, we are already more post-human than many of us care to admit. The convergence, the spike, the singularity, each of these in its own way unpacks the exponential acceleration in the pace and convergence of technological innovations and scientific discoveries that will lead to a virtual eschaton. Kurzweil's singularity and Damian Broderick's spike refer to the rapid acceleration in the pace of technological innovation. Expanding on Moore's law, depicted on the left side, simply that processing speed and storage doubles roughly every 2 years, the implication should be fairly clear. At some point in the relatively near future, if Moore's law holds true, computing power will exceed the capacity of the human mind. The machine will, at least theoretically, be more advanced than its maker. The singularity was anticipated several decades before Kurzweil's articulation of it, when Arthur C. Clarke stated, "The tool we have invented is indeed our successor." The other key aspect that inaugurates this technological eschaton, a virtual paradise of sorts, is through convergence, which you see depicted on the right. Referred to by some with the acronym NBIC, that is nanotechnology, biotechnology, information technology, and cognitive science, or also occasionally labeled GRIN, genetics, robotics, internet, and nanotech, the convergence of previously disparate arenas of research are rewriting the boundaries of their respective disciplines. Bioethics, which found its origins in the clinical context, at the bedside, now must contend with technical scientific data and complex technologies foreign to many who engage in the bioethical reflection. The problems facing us in this age of remaking humanity are many. First, the general public and even the educational elite see many of these technologies as merely science fiction, while in reality, many of them have been demonstrated at least at the level of proof of concept. Secondly, the general public, and sadly the church with it, frequently checks out of any conversation as soon as a hint of technical discussion begins. In our technologically sophisticated age, everyday people no longer have the luxury of pleading technological and scientific ignorance. Finally, at the speed at which we move from concept to application is increasingly shortened, leaving little time for preparation and ethical reflection. We must become better at being not just critical consumers of technologies that have reached the product marketplace, but also more involved in ethical and social evaluation of R&D itself. The Human Genome Project and ELSI come to mind as a model. As we look at the scientific advances and technological innovations occurring before our eyes, we stand at the door of advances of biblical proportions. The blind can be made to see, the deaf can be made to hear, those who have lost the ability to walk are restored to do so. Some of these advances are occurring in biotechnology, but many are moving from more traditional technological arenas. Surely there must be some obstacles which science cannot achieve, some realities which the artificial will merely be able to approximate. We must be careful here not to defer reflection on these potentialities, for time is no longer an ally in our moral processing. Even the likes of Carl Sagan has noted, we live in a society exquisitely dependent on science and technology, in which hardly anyone knows anything about science and technology. This is a clear prescription for disaster. We no longer have the luxury to plead technical ignorance on these cutting-edge issues. It's no longer sufficient to joke about not being able to program the VCR. Nothing short of the future of humanity and human flourishing as such hang in the balance. Everyday people, Christians, must come to a better understanding of the world in which we live, a technological world, a scientific world, not necessarily with the expertise of technical specialists, nor even with advanced training, but recognizing that blindly consuming these innovations is not appropriate. Furthermore, technical possibility should not become the starting point for ethical reflection. Indeed, as Catherine Hales has noted in her book, long before we introduce cybernetic technologies into the human body, we will already have become post-human. As a theologian and someone who studies culture, I'm less concerned with whether or not these technical possibilities will ever actually be realized, but rather that we come to live as if they already have. In the context of technological progress and the hope for a virtual paradise, no one bothers to ask if something is possible, because it probably is. Increasingly, we are no longer even interested to ask if the consequences are desirable, and sadly to suggest that we pause to question if something is morally appropriate often doesn't even appear to be on the table. This should sound an alarm that wakes us from an uncomfortably numb slumber. In the digitized reality of our lives, we have become mere commodities alongside the rest of this exploited creaturely reality still referred to by some as creation. As just one in a long series of evidences, our perception of children as gifts has shifted to children as consumer products and the quest for the betterment of our children's futures and, on the side, our own personal happiness. Concepts of gift and gratitude, normalcy, and average have been displaced in a world of edutainment industries and hyper-parenting, expressed with the relative recent introduction of a new term, hothouse kids. That there has been such minimal resistance to this shift from procreation to reproduction may not come as a surprise. Prenatal genetic diagnosis, PGD, for complexion services and other more cosmetic concerns such as eye color, as advertised by an LA fertility clinic in the past few years, not made up, real headline story, to save your siblings, a far more noble pursuit than mere consumer preference, both of which allow human dignity to fall under the crushing weight of instrumental reason. These disturbing trends do not even begin to express or discuss the explicit commodification of the human species through organ trafficking, egg harvesting, surrogacy, and human embryonic stem cell research. Here, humanity becomes mere means to ends, just like everything else, because the line between us as human beings and our tools has now become so thoroughly confused. Pushing this further, human replacement agendas see the future machines and human-computer hybrids, which may result as our children, the legacy of humanity when we eventually will disappear from existence. The language of the human mind as a CPU is no longer a mere metaphor in some circles. For some, being human is not substantively different than a machine. We are simply genetic information controlling a rather simplistic biological organism. Genetic information which can be extracted and inserted into whatever life form or reality we can imagine, be it digital or carbon-based. In the virtual paradise, there is no place for imperfection or for inefficiency, for these are the fundamental flaws of our bodily existence, which demand replacement. Technology drives towards goals in which it excels: efficiency, mass production, ease of use, productivity, organization, systematization. If you are familiar with any of my earlier work, it has been an attempt to understand the climate of our technological landscape and the importance for us to explore the nature of technologies in order to assess values inherent within their architecture for precisely these reasons. If you're interested in exploring this, I'd be happy to talk about it more in the Q&A or give you a few references to follow up. My own formulation, relying heavily on Carl Mitchum, Stephen Monsma, Al Borgman, among others, asserts a form of technological responsibilism that recognizes, first, that technology is value-laden, but not merely in an axiology, that is, the study of values, of good versus evil, but rather values that resist such traditional classifications. Secondly, it upholds the importance of moral agency and that the agent is responsible for their actions. Technologists, engineers, everyday people must eventually grapple with the nature of these technologies themselves. On the one hand, technicism, their techno-utopians, the view is built on the assumption that technology is inherently good, while on the other hand, technological rejection, or Luddites, view technology as inherently evil. While again, this oversimplifies the issues at stake, it raises the notion of values and value-ladenness as a concern regarding the nature of emerging technologies. Are the relevant values merely ascriptions of the user, or do the tools themselves embody certain values by virtue of their design assumptions and intent? So the last two points are much shorter than the first point. Dispositional values. If value-ladenness is an ontological aspect of technology, or in other words, that the nature of technologies themselves embody certain values, then the ethical discussion of technology should reflect upon the nature of such values and how they impact or impress upon us as users, again, both individually and societally. James K. Huggins, in a piece from ACM on the assumption of computing, suggests that power, speed, information access, and logical reasoning are all assumptions or values built into the very architecture of computer technology. As a technology, it promotes both anonymity and ultimate monitoring capabilities, democratization, and gatekeeper censorship in its applications. From a critical study of philosophy of technology, we can assert to our bumper sticker world that technologies are not all created equal, and not all are value neutral. Again, this is not to declare that they are essentially or inherently good or evil, but they are certainly not neutral, for they do embody a variety of values. In recent years, I've begun to think of them as embodying dispositional values. I use this term somewhat loosely because it has a technical meaning, or specifically a disputed range of meanings within certain streams of philosophy. In general, I'm using this term consonant with a recognition of value as intrinsic to the object, here the technology, rather than value ascribed or projected upon the object by the agent for its use. These dispositional values push us, again, sometimes lightly, sometimes strongly, in certain directions, not overriding our autonomy as agents as if it were technological determinism. They function as contributors of value, an impetus to moral agency. As we deal with greater levels of technological sophistication, which rely upon complex layering of evolving technologies that both refine original design and converge with other platforms and applications, this becomes ever more apparent and indeed more difficult. In computer ethics and engineering, these insights are part and parcel of disclosive ethics, which in at least some forms asserts that the opaqueness of technology to the laypersons demands that professionals, here the software, hardware, and wetware designers, have an ethical obligation to disclose assumptions and values that are built into the system. My fear is that the majority of those engaging in ethical evaluation of technology as primarily risk assessment have lost sight of the non-technical aspects of these technological innovations that stimulate the ethical issues we encounter. In our growing disciplinary fragmentation, we have lost important resources for our engagement of emerging technology, of emerging technology issues, and this is nowhere more apparent than in biotechnology itself. We must be suspicious of the value we place upon the tools and technologies we employ. If this assumption is correct, and I believe that it is, we can, indeed we must, have a discussion of values that may undergird particular technologies and thus the need for a prophetic voice pointing us to our theological frameworks to define our use and understanding of technology rather than vice versa. Our inability to properly assess and engage these embodied values and their implications before a technology comes through the product cycle places us at a serious disadvantage. Once something is out of the technological equivalent of Pandora's box, it is really difficult, given our cultural default bias towards progress, to put it away. In the words of computer ethicist Deborah Johnson, does the field of computer ethics simply follow the development of computer technology? Should the computer ethicist simply react to technological developments? Wouldn't it be better if the sequence were reversed, so that technological development followed ethics? I believe that we must assert our responsibility to ask these same questions of emerging technologies in general, as innovators, designers, builders, and consumers. What values do the technologies underlying our current bioethical and emerging biotech issues embody? Control, convenience, efficiency, the commodification of the human? Are these values conducive to human flourishing? Should they be restrained, harnessed? Can they be? So just a few throwaway thoughts with the last point. Techne, phronesis, and a few other lessons from the virtue tradition on pursuing the well-ordered life in a technologically ubiquitous age. Rescuing techne from the totalitarian regime of the technological society and recapturing its contribution to an ordered life of human flourishing. My own brand of technological responsibilism appeals to a virtue-enriched model. If I had more time, I would unpack some potentially useful ideas which emerge from the relatively young conversation of virtue epistemology. Additionally, I think there are also potential insights to be gleaned from the virtue tradition's interaction with the emotions as possible ways to think about how it is that these values impinge upon us and what and how we should respond. Here I have in mind some of the notions developed by the Stoics of apatheia and eupatheia. But more broadly, on a paradigmatic level, it is the Aristotelian notion of virtue as aimed at holistically to human flourishing and the cultivation of habits of excellence in all areas of life. For Aristotle's formulation of the virtuous life, you could not be merely committed to moral excellence over and against the intellectual excellence, and the opposite is true as well. You must pursue and embody both realms. The moral virtues or excellences of character were to be pursued in tandem with the intellectual virtues. These intellectual excellences of sort consisted of both practical and theoretical virtues, not just of phronesis, which is wisdom, and theoria, abstract reasoning, but also of techne, the technical knowledge and skill, the development of craft. The virtue model in the classical world saw a place for technical craft that was not all-encompassing, totalizing, or reductionistic, but was governed by wisdom, and in the Christian tradition, by love. It was through the need for this balance that, in the words of Julia Annis, that Plato and Aristotle understood, quote, the attractiveness of the intellectual search for truth and the intrinsic appeal of its objects can lead humans away from the aim of living a morally ordered life. It can lead them to aim to devote their energies entirely to the search for truth, to the point of wishing to transcend the boundaries of human life altogether, and to try to become immortal. End quote. Closing comment. The pursuit of truth and the cultivation of the technical craft must always serve human flourishing and the aim of a well-ordered life. As Christians, this well-ordered or morally ordered life is and must be in full submission to that which is the ultimate source of the true, the good, and the beautiful. It is with some burden that we must move beyond the mere technical discussion of risk assessments for these emerging technologies in order to access potential insights for a more sustained interest in philosophy of technology and the virtue tradition to preserve both human flourishing and human futures as such. Thank you. And I welcome your questions or comments.